Welcome to The Red Inker. I'm Behram Kazi, and today we'll be looking at Sri Lanka's T20 team and how well they could potentially do in the upcoming T20 World Cup. I'll be interviewing Estelle Vasudevan, picking her brain regarding Sri Lanka's squad, potential combinations, strengths, weaknesses, opponents, and their overall chances of success at the upcoming T20 World Cup in the USA and Caribbean.
Because Jared will get offended if I say I'm a freelancer, I'm currently working with Jared Kimber and you, of course, at Good Areas.
Yeah, we're both employed by Good Areas, and I have been dying to say that. Start the podcast that way. And anyway, let's get into it. It's been a decade, Estelle, since Sri Lanka won the T20 World Cup back in 2014. And since then, they've obviously lost a host of superstars. You know, the Mahelas and Sanghas and Malingas have retired. And in the last three editions of the T20 World Cup, they haven't been able to make it to the semi-finals. This time, however, they definitely seem to have a bowling attack, which seems to be world-class, at least on its day it does, right? So how do you think they'll fare?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, right? If you look at the bowling attack, like you mentioned, on paper, it looks as, I think, one of the best bowling attacks in the entire tournament among the 20 teams, right? I mean, it's hard to argue that they aren't among the top five at least. But my only concern there is the fact that none of these guys have been managed to play together because there have been so many injuries. I think Dushmanta Chamira has played like three games in the last 2 years, three T20s for Sri Lanka. So that is going to be the biggest concern. But yes, as you mentioned, I think they have a solid six options. And if the universe is listening, I just want it to keep them fit. I mean, whatever happens in the tournament, I think seeing those six in action, whatever combinations the management decides to go with, would be a treat for any cricket fan.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned Dushmanta Chamira, I want to target the pace department, you know, up front. Now, Sri Lanka have a slingy right-arm pace sensation, Mathisha Pathirana, at their disposal. Hopefully, he's fully fit and he's been absolutely top draw for Chennai in the IPL, not just this season, but also the season prior in which they lifted the trophy. They've got another slinger in Nuwan Tushara as well, and left-arm seamer Dilshan Madhushankar, who was mighty impressive in the ODI World Cup last year. Add to that the express pace of Dushmanta Chamira, and you've got four solid pace bowling options in addition to Angelo Matthews with the new ball, right? How do you see those guys line up in a pace attack? Who plays, who doesn't? How do they figure that out?
Yeah, just going back to how Sri Lanka have done things in the recent past, obviously it's going to be, I mean, you can't imagine a team that doesn't feature Pathirana, right? Just the way he's gone about things against the IPL teams, he's been fabulous. He's obviously very young in his career, hasn't played a lot of international cricket, but I think he would be the first name in that bowling lineup. He's done enough to have earned that spot, barring injury, of course. So he should be one. And then I would think, just looking once again at how Sri Lanka have gone about their combinations, you're likely to get only two fast bowlers, at least to start things off. At this point, I think they will be leaning towards Dushmanta Chamira. Chamira also part of the IPL, but didn't really feature heavily for KKR. But he's been Sri Lanka's Mr. Dependable, I would say. As long as he's fit, he's been able to perform in every game that he's played. He's an all-phase bowler, can bowl in the death, can bowl with the new ball, middle over, wicket taker. So he's got all that going for him. And just also, because the bowling attack is a bit inexperienced, or the other two paces are, you'd think that they would pick him for that reason as well, because he just adds that little bit of experience. He's played in a couple of World Cups, right? So that would be, to me, the two who they would favor. And of course, like you mentioned, Angelo Matthews will also be in the mix to bowl one or two overs in that power play and hopefully continue his... He's kind of had a really good run unexpectedly and quite hilariously in the power play. So he should be kind of that third option as a pacey.
It's crazy how he's still playing international cricket for Sri Lanka. And he was out of favor for the longest time in T20 internationals, right? Wasn't a part of the team. But now he's not the first name of the on the team sheet, but he's an important cog in that 11. Do you think that Angelo, you know, is primed to start every game?
Yeah, I don't see a situation where they drop him, at least early on in the tournament, because of, like you said, he wasn't in the T20 setup for a number of years. And then he's been brought back because of Sri Lanka's abysmal performance in the ODI World Cup last year, right? And he's been brought up to the setup with the kind of objective that he would add experience to the team. And to be fair to him, I mean, personally, I wasn't in favor of him coming back to the T20 side because I felt like Sri Lanka had gone beyond him and didn't really need him in the side. But to be fair, since he's been back, he's probably done as much as you can expect with both bat and ball. He's got a few, you know, he's had a few quick fire 20s, 30s with the bat. And he's also, like I mentioned, quite surprisingly been very effective with the new ball. Now, whether you think that he is your best option or he's amongst your best 2 to 3 options with the new ball is a different story. But he's kind of been effective. So I think that at least to start things off, because of, you know, how they've kind of set this flag in the stand and said, you know, we need this experience, it's tough to see him missing out from the 11.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I mean, I've been very impressed with his new ball wickets. Of course, every time he takes them, someone shares the statistics in our, you know, group that we have as part of Good Areas, WhatsApp group. And you also mentioned Pathirana, of course, 100% agree, definitely the first name on the team sheet after Hasaranga. And he was also the most expensive buy at the auction, you know, at the LPL. So his stock is, you know, rising meteorically for good reason. He is absolutely brilliant and could really be something if he manages his body properly. On Chamira, do you see perhaps Sri Lanka give Madhushanka a game just because he was just so, so impressive in the ODI World Cup? I'm not sure though what his T20 numbers look like. So has he been just as effective in the shortest format like we saw in the 50 over World Cup?
Yeah, the first thing with Dilshan Madhushanka is that he hasn't been fit. I mean, he had to pull out of the IPL, so he hasn't really had a lot of game time. And I think that's one of the other reasons where it makes sense to have Dushyant Chamira ahead of him. But the key factor is that he does offer you that left arm angle, right?
Which exactly.
You probably would want to play out against some of the teams that you come up against. So that'll definitely be a factor to consider. You know, I mean, personally, I would like to see three paces and like to see Sri Lanka go with an attacking, you know, four genuine bowlers, Hasaranga, and then the six other batters. But it doesn't look like that would happen. But I definitely think that between Tushara, Chamira, and Dilshan Madhushanka, it might be a kind of a horses for courses kind of thing. Because all three of them, I mean, Chamira, like I mentioned, is an all-face bowler. Dilshan Madhushanka, similarly, he does go for runs, but he's a wicket-taking option, right? And again, like I mentioned, the left-arm option. Tushara is a very, very good power play bowler. And that is an area that Sri Lanka do need someone to step in. So I think between those three, we might see a bit of rotation depending on fitness, but also against when you look at who they're coming up against. Like if you have a right-hander dominant top order, you might really have that option of bringing in Madhushanka just because of what he offers in terms of variety.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I'm a fan. I really enjoy his bowling. I think he can really make that new ball talk. We saw it in the ODI World Cup, and I've just got a thing for left-handers as well. So I'll be keeping a close eye, and I hope that he gets a game or two here and there. Of course, there is one express seamer who has proven to be a bit of an enforcer for Sri Lanka in the past, Lahiru Kumara, who failed to find a spot in this squad. Do you think he was harshly dealt with, hard done by, or it makes sense that he didn't make it?
The thing with Lahiru Kumara that he divides a lot of opinion in Sri Lanka. There's this thing about, you know, he's not good in pressure situations. He's, you know, he has the speed but doesn't have the brains, you know, all that kind of conversation comes into it. But I personally think since the 2021 World Cup, I don't know if you remember, but Sri Lanka were defending a total and Kumara went for some runs against David Miller, right? And Sri Lanka lost that game. And it could have been, it was a really crucial game because if they had won that, they'd probably have made the semifinals. And that was kind of the boiling point for a lot of fans where, you know, you start talking about he's not good enough. But since that point, he seems to have turned a page a little bit and been a lot more, has had a lot more control. But just looking at the four bowlers that they have picked, I'm not sure he pips any one of them because you've got Pathirana who kind of picks himself at this point. Chamira, the most experienced and all-face bowler. Dilshan Madushankar, the left-arm option. And then you've got Nuwan Tushara who's been in good form. He's played for Mumbai in the IPL and had a few good games. And he's also that massive wicket-taking threat in the power play overs, right? But if you look at Lahiru Kumara, he doesn't necessarily have a particular role per se in that you don't know whether you want to use him in the power play. Do you risk him in the death overs, right? Sure, he's an enforcer, but as the game has gone forward, you do see a lot of bowlers bowling quick, right? So teams aren't necessarily as susceptible to that kind of pace anymore. And you have to remember, he did well in 2021 and 2022, but Sri Lanka did play that kind of qualifier round, right, in the tournament. So he did come up against a lot of associate teams and lower ranked teams. So just looking at the squad, I feel like it's fair the four they have gone with.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. And I mean, he is a big unit, but Sri Lanka are actually blessed with a lot of exciting young pace bowling talent, which is a bit of a first after a long, long time, right? You'll have to go all the way back to the Vaas and Malinga and Kulasekara era to see that. But it's interesting how many a times you come into these ICC tournaments and Sri Lanka often have a fair few of these guys injured. This is perhaps the first time everyone is fully fit and raring to go. And I'm not trying to jinx this at all. I hope that their fitness, remains. But that must, give you some confidence as a Sri Lankan supporter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is one of the biggest reason why a lot of fans are kind of pinning their hopes on this team is because of that bowling attack. Because although we haven't seen them bowl together, you know what each one of them can bring to the table and they're finally fit, right? And if you look back at the last two tournaments, although Sri Lanka didn't make it through, they did push for a semi-final spot in both competitions, right? And that was with, I think, last World Cup. It was like their fifth or sixth or seventh best option with the fast bowlers. So if they can keep these guys fit in this tournament, I think they have a massive chance of going further than they did in the last two. But of course, you know, there are so many things that can go right and at the same time, so many things that can go wrong. But just on paper, looking at it ahead of the tournament, it looks really promising.
Yeah, and I mean, I think maybe it lacks a bit of experience, at least the pace attack, but the talent is definitely there. I feel like their ceilings are very high. And you're right to say that after a long time, it looks like Sri Lanka have gotten one of those bowling attacks that will really challenge opposition batters, right? Okay, so coming to the batting a bit now, I was looking at Sri Lanka's squad and I've noticed, and I've not just noticed this while looking at the squad, I've also followed Sri Lankan cricket and I've seen how they've, you know, kind of lost faith in explosive opening batter Kusal Janith Pereira. And they're now opting or leaning towards the young and exciting Pathum Nisanka, who has upped his strike rate in recent times quite significantly, even I would say, particularly in ODI cricket. What do you think made them make this switch? Is KJP past his prime? And is Nisanka prepared and ready for the task that lies ahead?
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, KJP is a funny kind of cricketer to talk about because, you know, like, he promises so much. But how many times have we actually seen him delivering on that promise is a question. Of course, you want to pick, I mean, I'm of the opinion that you want to pick batters who can really go after the bowling because that's where the game is going, right?
Yep.
You need guys who have that intent, particularly in the power play. But what I like about Pathum Nisanka is that he has changed completely in the last couple of years. I'm not just talking about, I know a lot of people are talking about him now because of the double 100 he got, right?
Yep.
But just the way he's grown in stature as a player, he was a kind, I mean, you look at his record, you probably see a strike rate of around 120 and you're not impressed, right? But the way he's gone about things in the recent past is something that is difficult to look past because he's getting runs, but he's also able to kind of accelerate and get quick runs now, which is not something that we saw when he started off, right? And just looking at that combination of Mendis and Pathum Nisanka, they've done really well. I think they were quite good in the last World Cup as well. And they've only gotten better between the two World Cups. So I'm not too disappointed with Kusajanit Pereira not being picked as an opening batter. I think if at all he was going to make the squad, it would have been at number three because that is the vacant position in the Sri Lankan lineup or the one that's not quite set in stone at the moment. But I don't know whether you can be too disappointed about him not getting picked. Sure, he has the promise of being a big hitter and, you know, no matter what the selectors say about power hitting in the Sri Lankan lineup, it is an area that Sri Lanka is lacking in. But just with who they've gone with in terms of Nisanka and Kusal Mendis to open the batting, I don't think you can make a case for Kusaljanit to come in ahead of either one of them.
That sounds good enough. I think your reasoning is sound. And all of you viewers and listeners, well, you heard it here first on the Red Inca. Estelle Vasudevan thinks that Pathum Nisanka was the right candidate for the opening job ahead of Kusaljanit Pereira for Sri Lanka's T20 World Cup campaign. Now, Estelle, you mentioned that power hitting is a bit of an issue in this Sri Lankan batting order. And there is one notable absentee when it comes to, you know, power hitting. It is hard-hitting middle-order batter Bhanuka Rajapaksha, who's actually done quite well for Sri Lanka in years gone by. The Asia Cup in 2021 instantly comes to mind. Or was it 2022? I forget. It was one of those years, right? He kind of took the game away from Pakistan in the final. And if we look at his recent form, he's actually looked out of sorts in the last 12 months or so. He is a traveling reserve with this team. And I feel like Sri Lanka probably thinks that if they need that power hitter, someone will get injured and he'll come and slot in. It's actually also smart because I was hearing you guys, you and Mark, on the Murali End podcast. And you were mentioning how Sri Lanka are quite smart with their subfielders. And they wouldn't want Bhanuka Rajapaksha to be one of their subfielders. So if they really need him, they'll just bring him in because he'll be a traveling reserve. But then that also means that there is an empty or vacant slot in the batting order. And the person that I feel would be the batter who will occupy that is Kamindu Mendis, who is primarily a batter, but can also bowl, spin with both hands. He's ambidextrous like that. And he's had a phenomenal run in Sri Lanka's international team of late, right? Perhaps not so much in T20s, but I've seen him do really, really well in Test cricket. He's actually charting new territory, you know, and his first-class record also checks out. Tell me more about Kamindu Mendis, the T20 player. Are you expecting him to bowl a couple of buffer overs here and there? Are you expecting him to bat at number three? Do you think it is, in fact, his time to shine?
Yeah, very interesting guy, Kamindu Mendis. I mean, not like his ambidextrous bowling notwithstanding, right? He's, I would say, Test cricket is his... That's his bread and butter. He's had a, you know, fantastic couple of years in domestic cricket, finally managed to break into the Test team and has got runs. So that is his format. And you would expect then following that, yeah, ODI cricket, probably something that he can shine in as well, right? But then they did give him an opportunity in T20 cricket. And his form just carried through to that format as well. I don't think it's his best format by any means, right? But with the way cricket is being played right now, you almost have to pick players based on form, right? So if you spoke about Bhanuka Rajapaksa, Bhanuka Rajapaksa has not done anything in about a year, right? He hasn't played for Sri Lanka. He's gone to the SA T20. He's gone to the IL T20. Hasn't gotten too many games there. Played the kind of the preparation tournament for the World Cup. Got one score of 88. Didn't do much beyond that, right?
But he's not the fittest bloke around, or is he?
Yeah, he's not. He's, I mean, much talked about fitness issues have been, you know, prevalent. But of course, Sri Lanka have kind of almost done away with it. Like, if you're good enough, you're making it into the side, fitness or no fitness, right? But he just hasn't been able to put together any run of form as such. Kamindu is the opposite. Whatever format he's been playing, he's managed to get runs on the board. And that's, I think at this point, yeah, you want to have a big hitter, you want to have power hitters, and that potential that Bhanuka Rajapaksa has, nobody else in this squad has. But you also need to get runs, right? All the potential in the world doesn't matter if you're not scoring. And Sri Lanka is the type of team that can't afford to carry a batter like that. So Kamindu Mendy is coming in. I think a lot with his bowling, a lot will depend on the conditions. Obviously, he gives his captain a lot of options, right? Because he bowls with the left arm and the right arm. And I think in that sense, the squad that Sri Lanka have picked are also quite smart in that you mentioned Bhanuka Rajapaksa's fielding, right? I also believe that if he's not in your first choice 11, it makes sense not to have him in the squad because you don't want him, like, he's not going to offer much from the bench, right? Kamindu Mendy is likely to bat at number 3, I would think, given how he's played in the recent past. And he's a type of guy who offers a lot. So Sri Lanka have a lot of those type of players in this squad. Dhananjay De Silva has kind of appeared from nowhere. I don't know. I don't want to say anything bad about him on this spot because, I mean, we know how our boss feels about it, right? So, yeah. And so, like, in that sense, the picks that Sri Lanka have made, I think the success or the kind of whether they're smart picks or not will be decided by the conditions. And a lot of this has to do with half of the tournament being played in the West Indies, where we are expecting things to be kind of a bit low and slow, right? We're not expecting 200 plus to be kind of par totals. So in those conditions, I think Sri Lanka doesn't have a bad batting lineup because they have the type of batters who can cope with the spin and cope with slower conditions. It's when the game goes to that 190, 200, 220, whether they can do that consistently is the question mark. But if you're going for games with 160, 170, I think they probably have the right picks in this 15-man squad.
Yeah, and I mean, the way I've seen Kusal Mendes really evolve his game, he's become a bit of a power hitter at this point. We saw it at the ODI World Cup. We've seen it since then. He would be the guy who I think Sri Lanka would earmark as that batter who would take the game away from the opposition. But of course, one last bit on the lack of firepower. You mentioned how Sri Lanka actually have batters in that, you know, middle order who will be suited to slow and low conditions. Upul Taranga, the selector, said the same thing, that the team was picked keeping in mind that the pitches will be, they will assist spin and they will be slow. But then you've got this potential middle order of Charita Salanka, who is the vice-captain and fantastic player of spin. Sadhira Samarawickrama, who's done really, really well in recent times, right? He's really kind of put his hand up and told the world that I'm here to stay and I belong at this level. And then there is DDS, the wonderful, wonderful DDS. What roles do you see these guys kind of take on in that batting order? And do you feel like all three can slot in the same starting 11 or someone will have to miss out?
Yeah, I doubt that DDS makes it into the playing 11, at least in the beginning of the tournament, just because he hasn't really had a great run with the bat. I mean, obviously, he's played in a lot of different roles and hasn't been given the opportunities he probably deserves. Right now, from what you can gather from the selectors' thinking, he's probably fighting it out with Kamindu for that number three spot. Mm. Obviously, DDS's bowling really gives him an edge because he is a part-timer, but he's also one of the kind of better part-timers that you will find in international cricket right now, right?
He's really hard to get away.
He is tough to get away, and he bowls those kind of economical overs for you. He can give you those in the middle overs.
Flatter, but I don't see trajectory, wicket to wicket sort of stuff. You can probably
expect, and he's a gun fielder as well. Mm. So he does have those things going for him, but I don't think he makes it into the playing 11. Asalankov is obviously one of the first names on that sheet, right? He's had a good run in ODI cricket, good run in T20 cricket. He's good in chasers, which Sri Lanka really need because they seem to struggle. Yeah. And then that it's going to be Sadira's position is the one I feel that is still questionable because he's not a guy who scores quickly and he's not a guy who shows a lot of intent to score quickly. I think his massive value would be if it is a slow and low turner because he's very good against spin. He's able to use his feet really well. He's very wristy. So that will be kind of his niche. Personally, I feel like they don't need him. I feel like Sri Lanka can go with, like I mentioned before, six batters. You've got your Kusal Mendis, Pathum Nisanka to open. You've got Kamindu Mendis at three. Then you've got Asalanka, Matthews, and Dasun Shanaka. Those are your six batters, right? And then you allow Vanidu Hasaranga, who's had a really good 2 years with the bat, the opportunity to float up and down that order, whether he wants to bat at seven or maybe float up to number four or five, depending on the situation and who's bowling. Then that opens up an opportunity for you, who have one of the best bowling contingents of the tournament, to play that extra bowler, right? Because at this point, you're looking at playing Samaravikrama at four and then going with three frontline bowlers plus Vanidu plus Angelo Matthews and Dasun Shanaka make up the fifth bowler. But if you go without Sadira Samaravikrama, you can potentially have Nuwan Tushara and Mathisha Pathirana and either Chamira or Dilshan Madushankar, right? And then Mahesh Teekshan and obviously Vanidu kind of pick themselves. So Sadira Samaravikrama's spot is the one that I would be thinking twice about. His value is obviously, like I said, if it is a slow, low turner, but he hasn't had a great run in T20 cricket. So whether you want him at number four or not will be the question. And I mean, Vanidu has this habit of promoting himself to number four. And then that makes Samaravikrama's role even more tricky because if he doesn't get to bat in that first 10 overs, right, you don't want him coming in the latter end and trying to go after the bowling because he doesn't have that kind of game, right?
True.
So that will be the big question for Sri Lanka. Do they want Samaravikrama at four or do they want to go with a more bowling-heavy playing 11?
He sweeps well, doesn't he, Sadira Samaravikrama? So I think that might be a useful skill to have in this particular World Cup. Also, in the absence of Jared, I will just go on and say this, that perhaps it makes more sense to have DDS ahead of Dasun Shanaka, no? Because buffer overs of spin bowling would prove to be more fruitful than Shanaka's medium pace?
No, to me, Dasun Shanaka is an indispensable option in Sri Lankan lineup for his batting. Because Sri Lanka doesn't have anyone who can clear the boundary as consistently as someone like Shanaka when he gets going. And the problem has been when they are playing Sadira Samaravikrama at four and playing seven batters plus Vanidu Hasaranga, is Hasaranga is getting promoted in almost every game. And then Shanaka is batting at number eight and getting like five deliveries, right? That's been the problem over the last year or so. I still think that he is a better power option than Angelo Matthews. But Matthews offers a bit more with the ball in the power play alone, right? But yeah, DDS, see, the problem with DDS is he always gets picked. I hope Jared doesn't watch this, but he always gets picked based on the fact that he is a good all-round bowling option. But his batting is nowhere near where you need it to be in T20 cricket right now, right? And I think the selectors have also kind of identified that if he's playing, he needs to be batting in the top three. So I don't see him coming in for Shanaka. And I don't think he should. I think Shanaka should be a definite pick in the 11. I know it's arguable now with the likes of Dhunit Velalagi in the side, and but they kind of think of his bowling option, him as a bowling option. But I wouldn't be dropping Shanaka for anybody.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8, the new home of cricket intelligence.
Well, there's that, folks. You heard her. Dustin Shanaka, indispensable. So if he doesn't do well, you can go and attack Estelle online, give her hell. But no, I mean, he has played some clutch knocks for Sri Lanka. I feel like what they truly needed at this point was someone like a Thisara Pereira to be born a decade late. But then they wouldn't have won the 2014 World Cup. So that kind of player profile would have really suited this lineup. You know, you get the hard-hitting batter. You get someone who can, you know, give you some really difficult overs as well. And I mean, he is a really underrated T20 cricketer. I don't think he's spoken of enough because he was just that good. Took a hat-trick versus Pakistan, I think, if I can remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. I feel like if they had a Thisara Pereira over here, then we'd be a lot more confident with this team. You mentioned Dhunit Velalagi. We saw him do extremely well in last year's Asia Cup. Everyone was making fun, or not making fun, but enjoying the pronunciation of his name. A lot of people, including myself, were calling him Velalagi. Then turned out he was Velalagi. I think the guys over at The Great Cricketer were calling him Velalaj, Velalagar, Velalegend. I came up with that after his performance versus India. Would Sri Lanka be tempted to maybe play him in addition to, obviously, like Hasaranga and Teekshana pick themselves, right? They are not just Sri Lanka's two premier spinners, but two of the best spinners to be featuring in this competition overall. Is there a world in which Velalagi partners them and it's that three-man spin attack?
Yeah, I actually think they're thinking about it because in the press conference following the announcement of the squad, Upul Taranga was talking about Velalagi as a power play option. And that how he could come into the side at the expense of one of the fast bowling all-rounders, which is Matthews and Dasun Shanaka, right? So it's a funny thing because he hasn't played and he hasn't debuted in T20 cricket yet, right?
He hadn't really played a lot of ODI cricket either before he did all of that, you know, in the Asia Cup.
Yeah. And he's a type of player, it's actually quite interesting to think about. When you look at him, he doesn't seem like much, right? He doesn't, like, you know, with the Sri Lankan bowling lineup, each one of them has like some amazing skill, right? Like you look at Matisha, just brilliant. You can't get him over the boundary. He bowls a lot of dot balls, brilliant at the death. You have Tushara, slinging action, but not that stereotypical death bowler. He's more of a power play bowler who can move the ball around. Dilshan Madushankar, left armer who can swing the ball. Chamira, bowls that, you know, difficult length to get away, can move the ball. Mahesh Teekshana is that mystery spinner. Hasaranga is a leg spinner who bowls more googlies than leg spinners. Everyone's kind of got that something unique about them and something special about them. Dhunit Velalagi is the guy who nobody looks at and considers he is much of anything, right? But he seems to perform every time he's given an opportunity. That is the thing about him. I remember the first time he came into the scene, I think it was a series against Australia during lockdown, right? Covering those games in Palakkale, everyone was asking, why is this guy being picked? This is all hype because, you know, he performed well in the under-19 World Cup. He's a bits and pieces player. What can he contribute? But every game, he seems to be able to get something out of himself, whether it's, you know, putting on that crucial 30-run partnership with the bat or picking up like one wicket right when Sri Lanka need it, or actually he's a really good fielder as well, right? So he is another one of those options that Sri Lanka have picked who can give you those little supporting acts that you need to win a World Cup or go further in a tournament, right? So I wouldn't be surprised actually if they play him because, like I said, they mentioned it already that he could be a power play option. So he could come in for either Matthews or Dasun Shanaka. But I do think it's not going to happen at the beginning of the tournament. It might be if they see, like I said, a right-hander heavy betting lineup, or if the conditions are expected to be especially conducive to spin bowlers, then we might see him coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I was mad impressed when I saw him in the Asia Cup, and he's so young, yet it seems like he's been playing international cricket since forever, right? He's so composed. You mentioned he's a great fielder. That's correct. He's no mug with the bat at all. And he gives Sri Lanka a slow left arm option. And as you mentioned, he could also potentially be used in the power play. I feel like he has a very, very high ceiling. Obviously, he's a developing cricketer. He's young. There's so much more cricket that he has to play, and he can really, really get better. Whether or not he gets game time remains to be seen, but he's just one of those cricketers that you automatically root for, because the way he approaches the game, the attitude with which he plays the game, that's what you want out of an athlete, out of a sportsman. And yeah, I feel like, you know, if they can kind of crack that and find a way to field those three guys on a wicket that is turning square, then Sri Lanka will be an extremely difficult team to beat. But coming to the captain, right? Vanindu Hasaranga was injured in the ODI World Cup. Unfortunately, couldn't feature. We all know that when it comes to right-arm wrist spinners, he is easily top three in the world, right? Probably thinking, if you look at all wrist spinners, then Kuldeep also makes it. But there's Rashid Khan, right? There's Adam Zampa. And then you've got Vanindu Hasaranga. And I think he's a far better spinner than Adam Zampa. Zampa just knows how to utilize himself like really well, and the captains do a good job with him as well. But Vanindu Hasaranga is captain. He's a bit of a hothead, as we've all seen. He's dodged suspensions. He's come out of test retirement to dodge suspensions. It's been an interesting career arc. I remember when Sri Lanka, well, then they were calling it a C team toward Pakistan. He completely like bamboozled every single batter. And I remember that 3-0 whitewash that Sri Lanka, incurred on Pakistan in Pakistan's own backyard. Vanindu Hasaranga was the main name. He was the star of the show. And ever since then, he hasn't particularly looked back. I feel like his batting has also improved, and now we can actually call him a genuine all-rounder. I'd go that far because I feel like he has that talent. Just how important will Vanindu's personal performance be with respect to Sri Lanka's overall success in this upcoming T20 World Cup with both bat and ball, and also as the leader?
Yeah, it's going to be massive, I think. If he has a good tournament, I think, I mean, I don't know if I'm being delusional, but I already think that Sri Lanka can potentially do really well in this competition. But if he has a good tournament, it could be like, proper success, because he offers so much with both bat and ball. Like you said, he's that attacking option with the ball, right? He gets you wickets. That's the main thing, I think, when you look at bowling attacks, you have players who have to play different roles. And in Sri Lanka, in the Sri Lankan attack, if you look at it, you see a lot of containment options, right? You have Mathisha Pathirana, even Mahesh Dixon is not a wicket-taking option. His role is to contain. So you need that aggressive option of Vanindu Hasaranga, who can pick up wickets in those middle overs. And that's where his success has come in the past as well. He's able to pick up wickets, and that's his main value to the team. But I do think, actually, he might even be even more valuable with the bat than the ball this tournament, because that impetus he's able to add, if he's able to get going in the middle overs, could be massive for Sri Lanka, because we've discussed, right, about the power hitters and the lack of that kind of potential amongst the players that have been picked, apart from a couple of players. What he offers with the bat can really change the complexion of that batting lineup, right? If he's batting at number four, or whether he's coming in at number seven or eight, it doesn't matter. If he's able to get going, it could really have a massive impact overall. And of course, like if you look at any campaign, right? Any, especially for Asian teams, your captain does well, you have a good tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they will be looking for. He is a hothead, so I hope he doesn't get suspended at some point for doing something unnecessary. But he's going to be absolutely crucial. I don't think they are as dependent on him with the ball as they were. But, good tournament for him could spell a really good tournament for Sri Lanka.
100% concur with that. And I mean, he is an out-and-out superstar. I think he's Sri Lanka's best cricketer right now. And he's got a killer googly as well, right? Mm. It's interesting how you've mentioned that you're actually expecting more from him with the bat. And you feel that that could be more important for Sri Lanka than his performances with the ball. And I mean, I'm all here for Wanindu Hasaranga to take this tournament by storm, right? Grab it by the scruff of his neck. And he's one of those cricketers that I really enjoy watching. So here's to hoping that he has a good one. And to your point, if he does, that automatically means that Sri Lanka will be a really, really top team contending at this event. Anyway, if we look at their group, right, Sri Lanka have South Africa, which is probably the most, tough opponent that they'll have to face in this entire group stage. Then you've got arch rivals Bangladesh, right? That's a game that no one is missing, the Nagin Derby. And that's the game where Wanindu needs to rein his emotions in. He doesn't need to lose his shit over there because I can almost expect it to be a heated encounter, right? And then Nepal and Netherlands are two opposition teams that you expect Sri Lanka to defeat. But then again, this is T20 cricket in 2024. Anyone can beat anyone. And particularly the Netherlands, you cannot take them lightly. So yeah. In a way, it is a straightforward group, but also one in which you can expect an upset here and there. It's an interesting one. Would you say Sri Lanka are favorites to qualify for the Super 8s alongside South Africa, perhaps?
I think just how things have gone in the recent past, they probably would back themselves to go through to the Super 8s. But like you mentioned, I mean, I know people are in Sri Lanka laughing about Bangladesh losing to USA. Okay. And that does not bode well. But we discussed this in the previous pod that we recorded as well, is that if anything with Asian teams, sometimes that emotion can spur things on. And I think Bangladesh playing Sri Lanka and coming into the tournament having lost to USA, and then playing Sri Lanka is definitely going to spur them on because they know that, let's be honest, right? Looking at that group, you're expecting South Africa to top it just based on the fact that they've had this incredible batting transformation and one of the most powerful batting lineups, I would say, in the entire tournament. Just based on that, you're expecting them to top the group, right? So then it's going to have to be between Bangladesh and Sri Lanka if things go according to what everyone's expecting, right? So that game is going to be massively crucial because you don't want to get too emotional about it. But Bangladesh have played well against Sri Lanka in the most recent series they played, right? They had a couple of good chasers. So that is going to be massive. But I, like you said, you can no longer underestimate teams like Nepal and the Netherlands because they've developed as countries. They're playing a lot more cricket. Netherlands is coming off a tri-series. Nepal has had some good games as well leading up to the tournament. So you can't underestimate them. But I would say at this point, a lot of people, they've got the seedings already decided, right? SA, South Africa is D1 and Sri Lanka is D2. So it would be an upset. I think it would be an upset if they don't make it through.
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to agree with that because right now I would take Sri Lanka over Bangladesh. But I mean, that is going to be one spicy fixture. And it's not like Bangladesh can't defeat Sri Lanka, right? They definitely have the ability to go on and win that game. But of course, right now, Sri Lanka look like the better side. And I also feel like at their best, Sri Lanka could potentially defeat South Africa as well, especially if the ball gets a bit of turn. Then I would really start to back them all of a sudden. But yes, conventional wisdom suggests that South Africa is definitely going to be one of those teams that's going to the Super 8s. And then you'd probably end up taking Sri Lanka over Bangladesh if you're a betting person. But it'll be an interesting one. I feel like this could even be the group of death because the Netherlands defeated Bangladesh in the ODI World Cup, didn't they? Right? And they'll be here to prove a point as well. And they had a pretty good previous campaign in the T20 World Cup, defeating South Africa and all. For all we know, they'll defeat South Africa again. I mean, if Roloff and Ackerman were available, then I might have even made that claim as a non-jokingly one. But anyway, there is one major caveat in all of this. You mentioned, I mentioned, we both spoke about this earlier in the podcast, that Upul Taranga selected this team based on the conditions that are expected in the Caribbean. But if you look at this group stage, I mean, I'm not disagreeing that with Sri Lanka's potent spin attack, games that are going to be played in the West Indies will favor them conditions-wise. But if you look at the group stage alone, it's just the Netherlands that they're playing in the Caribbean. Every other team they're playing in the States. Do you think that could prove to be a bit of a problem? Could that hamper Sri Lanka's progress, hypothetically?
I don't think so. I just think that, you know, comparatively, if you look at the USA and compare it to the other countries that have hosted World Cups, there's very little that we know about the conditions, right? And they have a lot of drop-in pitches and, you know, put like things that are being put together as we speak. So it's, I feel it's very difficult to imagine a USA leg where you're getting a lot of 200 plus scores. I feel like it will still be on the lower scoring side, and that will definitely benefit Sri Lanka. But like I said before, I don't expect them to be too, you know, stressed about the conditions per se in that first round, because you have to win whatever's said and done, right? Like once you get to that Super 8s, then you can think about conditions and whatnot, right? At this point, I think they'll just go with the team who they think is the best 11. And try to, I think the game against South Africa is going to be massive, because if they can win that just to start off the tournament, then from that point onwards, they'll have the confidence, right, to go through any team. And again, South Africa is a team that probably is also worried about conditions.
Yeah.
Because on paper, at least, or what we've spoken about, they seem very one-dimensional in that, you know, they're going to bash everybody. And then, you know, restrict teams. So I don't think they'll be massively concerned about the fact that they're playing in the USA, because it's going to be like other teams are not going to know the conditions, and neither are Sri Lanka, right? So it's going to be tricky for all or everyone concerned. They'll back themselves to make it through to the Super 8s. And once they get there, that's when I think tactically it's going to be interesting to see how the combinations work, not just for them, but the other teams they come up against.
All right. And if you look at, you know, world cricket right now, as of this moment, you've got the IPL, which just finished, right? So a lot of the top players in the world have gotten enough practice under their belt and, you know, raring to go. Then you see pretty much every other nation, you know, play international series at this point. Sri Lanka haven't. Do you think that could be a bit of an Achilles heel?
Yeah, that is an interesting one, because I mean, we spoke about the bowling attack, and I think apart from Dhunit Vellalage, every other player had an IPL contract. Of course, a couple of them couldn't take part because of injuries, but every other player was good enough to make it into the IPL. And a few of them got a lot of games in the IPL, right? So they'll be coming in with a decent amount of form. But it's the batters that should be a bit concerned, because they haven't played much international cricket over the last couple of months. They did play a kind of a warm-up tournament before the squad was due to be announced. But apart from that, they haven't had anything. But, I mean, it's a tricky one for Sri Lanka, because in the last couple of tournaments, they've played that first round qualification round, right? So they had that kind of, no disrespect to the other teams that made it to that round, but they sort of did use that as warm-ups to the tournament itself, because they were by and large the best team out of the lot, right? They had a couple of hiccups in the last tournament, but in 2021 they were absolutely dominant and didn't really have to worry much. So they were coming in, not only were they getting match practice, but they were also gaining a lot of confidence playing those teams and beating them well, right? This time around they don't have that. So it could be a bit tricky. And like I mentioned before, conditions are unfamiliar, right? So we don't know how things will go. I still think they'll be confident of getting ahead of the three teams, Netherlands, Nepal and Bangladesh. But, you know, anything can happen in these tournaments, like we mentioned, right?
Yeah. And I mean, time will tell how they fare. But quickly, before we end this, make a quick prediction on where Sri Lanka will finish in this T20 World Cup.
I will say they will be in the Super 8s. I think that's the minimum they can do in this tournament. If anything below that would be a massive disappointment, particularly with that bowling attack. But honestly, I would put them as a dark horse for the semifinals. Because I think if conditions can just give them a nudge a little bit, I think they can compete with any team out there, because they've got a fantastic bowling lineup. If things click, they can be amongst the top four in this tournament.
Yeah, I think if their batting can really come through in the Super 8 stage, if they are to make it that far, then they are an outside chance for the semifinals, because I do look at that bowling attack and feel quite good about it. And I haven't felt that way about Sri Lanka for quite a while. Maybe post Sangamahela, you know, I've always thought that they've dropped off quite a bit, but now we're seeing this resurgence in Sri Lankan cricket, and a lot of young talented cricketers are coming up. Like Partham Nisanka is just one of them, right? This kid could really make something out of his career. So here's to hoping that they do upset a few teams and make it to the semis. And thank you so much for taking out the time, Estelle. It was an absolute pleasure to talk all things Sri Lankan cricket with you and discuss their chances at this T20 World Cup.
Thanks for having me, Bairam.
Anytime. Cheers.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.